Hello, and welcome to the Versus Country podcast interview with David Morris. I'm Stephen Kendis, author of Hunting the First Date, and I will be your moderator today on this exclusive conference call with David Morris, one of the hosts of Versus Country's The Bucks of Tecamate. David's industry experience includes 20 years as owner and manager of Georgia's famous Burnt Pine Plantation and 20 years as the executive publisher and owner of Game and Fish Publications and North American Whitetail Magazine. While at Burnt Pine, David conducted pioneering work on food plot management for whitetails. That work was continued on Whitetail Magazine's Deer Research Facility, Steve Vaughn's Fort Perry Plantation, which, along with Tecamate Ranch, is recognized as the place where food plot-based nutrition came of age. David currently owns and manages whitetail ranches in Montana and Texas, both of which serve as proving grounds for the Tecamate food plot program. Okay, we really appreciate your time, David. I know you must stay constantly busy. So besides hunting for the show, do you still have time to get out and hunt just to hunt for yourself?
Absolutely, Steve. Hunting is a passion for me. It's not just a job. And, you know, as a serious trophy whitetail hunter, I have to admit that cameras and big whitetails don't go together. So every chance I get to go without the camera, I go. And not just here in the United States either. I like to travel and frequently go to Africa, Argentina, Europe after various games. Just being in the woods is a great pleasure and privilege.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, when we look at the show on Versus, it seems like you guys have a pretty good time on the show. So what's it like working with such a great team at Versus?
Well, with Jeff Foxworthy and Gary Schwartz, how can you not have fun? And we do have fun, you know. With it's a little intimidating, to be honest with you, sharing the hosting responsibilities with someone as famous as Jeff Foxworthy. But when we're doing the show and we're out in the woods and we're chasing whitetails, you know, Jeff is not the famous comedian. Jeff is just Jeff, and he's a passionate hunter, an outdoorsman, and a great game manager. Now, Gary Schwartz has more passion for whitetails than anybody I have ever known. And just being around Gary is, if that doesn't get your blood up and your excitement going, I don't know what will. Two great guys to work with.
That sounds like a lot of fun, I'm sure. So besides having a good time and having fun out there, you also cover some very serious issues pertaining to hunting. So what are the issues that are most important to you?
Well, Steve, Jeff and Gary and I feel privileged to have been able to realize our deer hunting dreams. And so we feel an obligation, to be honest with you, to share those dreams with other people and to help them help other hunters realize their own deer hunting dreams. And we know how that can be done by managing land and improving wildlife habitat to the advantage of both the hunter and the wildlife. We really want to take that message of game management, improving the quality and the number of deer on one piece of property to the people out there that are hungry for that information. We want to see them get the same enjoyment that we have from our own places. But the other thing that's a real passion for us, too, is to see families involved, kids and wives and daughters. It is a big part of what we do is the involvement of the whole family in the outdoor experience.
Yeah, I can definitely understand your position there. I have a wife and two daughters who hunt as well, so I'm sort of in the same boat. Now,
absolutely.
You know, when we talk about Versus in general and the Bucks of Tecamate specifically, you know, I just get the impression that the show gives you the appropriate forum to address those hunting topics that are near and dear to you.
It does. Versus has been a great partner in this TV show. You know, the thing that I really enjoy about Versus too is they have a passion for the outdoors, and you can see it in their programming. And when we first began to decide where we wanted to have our show aired, there were some questions about it. But not any longer. Versus is the place for outdoor programming. Some of the best shows in the outdoors, I think, are on Versus. And we have the great privilege of being able to hunt with the people from Versus. They show their passion by getting out in the field. Gavin Harvey, the former president of Versus, took his first whitetail on my ranch in South Texas, and has been a passionate hunter and supporter of the outdoor industry ever since then. Now he's been to Africa a couple of times and hunted elk and more whitetails, and as the saying goes, he drank the Kool-Aid. So what a great place to have our show aired.
Great, great. So without further ado, let's now open up for questions from our other guests. Okay, we can take the first call.
Our first call comes from Paul Bambera with huntinglife.com. Please go ahead, sir.
David?
Yes, Paul.
Oh, thank you for putting such big bucks in front of us on TV all the time. You do a better job of it than anyone I see.
Well, believe me, that is our pleasure.
It's ours too. But I have to ask you, as we see hunting license sales declining all around the country, and we see the nature of hunting itself getting into a lot of it getting into more and more expensive type higher end hunts with a lot of areas closed off. What can we do to increase participation in this sport and to get more people involved, so ultimately to secure our future of hunting?
Oh, a great question, and I think the answer there is to make it fun for the entire family. Hunting should not just be a men's only sport. It should be something that the ladies and the kids, both boys and girls, enjoy. And I think getting involved with more than just hunting, getting involved in land management, getting involved in understanding the animal, the biology of the animal, tends to make hunting more of a lifestyle rather than just a seasonal event. And so one of the big things that we do on Tecumseh is we push the family participation and the family experience. My girls, I have three daughters. My girls actually know more about managing for white-tailed deer than, I hate to say it, than many biologists do, because we're on the ground out there doing it. They participate year-round with us, not just during hunting season. So one of the real passions we've got is to get more people involved, the ladies, the kids, and get them involved not just in the day they go hunting, but in the lifestyle of land management and whitetail hunting.
Well, thanks for a great answer there. And what conservation groups are you supporting along those same lines?
Well, we support QDMA, Quality Deer Management Association, of course, the NRA, Safari Club, really all of the associations and the groups that are shoulder to shoulder promoting hunting, the Shooting Sports Foundation. I mean, we support them all, because we hunters, whether you're a bow hunter, a muzzleloader hunter, or a rifle hunter, we all have to stick together to make this sport stronger and also have a greater voice in a world that would like to curtail some of our participation in the outdoors. So it is important that we work together, all the groups that support hunting work together.
Well, David, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from G.J. Moore with Hunt Kentucky. Please go ahead, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Morse?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm a big fan of your show and big fan of Versus Country in general.
Thank you.
A couple quick questions. Number one, have you ever got a chance to hunt in Kentucky?
Well, you know, when I heard you were from Kentucky, my immediate thought was, you're lucky. There's some fantastic hunting in Kentucky. And, yes, I have. I've hunted whitetail over in Ballard County in far western Kentucky. And what was surprised when I went there, that those are basically Midwestern deer. Those are big, big whitetails there. And some of the biggest and some of the best deer killed in recent years have been taken in Kentucky. What a fantastic state. A lot of diversity there in Kentucky, too, but you have that tremendously fertile river bottom habitat and some big deer coming out of that country.
Yes, sir. We're growing some big ones. My other question is, you know, most private tracts here in Kentucky, you know, average in a range of 100 to 300 acres, you know, unlike your place maybe in Texas or a ranch in Montana. You know, how do you suggest managing these kind of places when you don't know how many deer, you know, your neighbor may be taking? I know food's number one importance. Do you suggest any way to manage your places different?
Well, that is a great question. And when Tecumseh began developing the intensive food plot strategy, our goal was to empower small landowners. We knew that the future of deer hunting is dependent on small tracts. If you can't effectively manage small tracts, then wildlife management in the U.S. is going to be threatened. So when we began to develop this food plot strategy, it was with an eye toward empowering small landowners, 100 acre, 50 acre, 200. When you say, you know, for instance, my place in Montana, which a lot of people say, well, he's got a place in Montana, it's got to be big. My little ranch in Montana is 80 acres. That's all it is. Now, I am fortunate to be surrounded by national forest, and I have two 20-acre food plots, so you can guess where all the deer within, let's say, 1,000 or so acres of the surrounding country come to eat. They eat on my place. But we are having incredible success and seeing incredible success on small tracts. But if you intensely manage those small tracts, primarily through food plots, you can draw, hold, and attract more and even grow bigger deer on small tracts than most people think is possible. And the beauty of it is that you actually can constrict their home range by having an intensive food plot program and hold those deer closer to home, thereby losing fewer deer to your neighbors. And we're seeing incredible results on tracts as small as 200 or 300 acres. Now, it does depend in part on who your neighbors are. But one of the things that we always do when we're helping landowners set up a management program is we do a neighbor assessment. Is this a neighbor that's going to be a problem? If it is, we tend to orient the food plots away from that neighbor. But on small tracts, as small as 100, 200 acres, you can greatly improve your hunting situation and your wildlife populations through intensive food plot management. We're seeing it over and over and over. Now, you are limited if you have a bad neighbor. There's no question that that's going to pose a problem for you, but you'll be surprised what you can do on very small tracts under an intensive food plot program.
All right. I appreciate it, sir. Number one, I really enjoy seeing your entire family participate in your show.
Well, appreciate that.
That's really important. Appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Do you have another question?
We do have a question from Jim Lombardi with huntersprostaff.com. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, David. How are you, sir?
Hey, Jim. Good. Thank you.
I'm a big fan of yours. You have a lot of information that's always available to us, so it's a really great show.
My question is,
I know your background greatly involves the development of properties and food plots. Our website offers services and products related to property management with the recent baiting ban in Michigan. Unfortunately, in Michigan, a lot of people depend on those golden acorns and carrots. And I'm looking to expand hunters' minds into understanding the benefits of creating food plots, not only on private land, but on the vast pieces of state land. What advice can you provide to those hunters who may not have their own pieces of property? Can food plots be managed on state game areas?
Well, Jim, they can be managed on state game areas, but probably not by individuals. You're looking at the state agencies, which will have control of that process. Now, the problem on public land on food plots is a lot of times there's a multiple land use strategy on those public lands, and they're not able to clear enough food plots to have a significant nutritional impact on that deer herd. And as a general rule, that's what I see on public land. The idea, a lot of times on public land, you'll see the food plots are placed on their hunting plots, really, is what they are. They're placed on loading docks or small openings in the woods. And they're good for attracting game. Now, if you have a public hunting situation where you have a significant amount of pressure, those food plots are going to be the activity on those food plots is going to be curtailed very quickly because of the hunting pressure. But for the most part, on public land, the food plots that I have seen are not nutritional food plots. They're attraction food plots. If you want to have a significant impact on the size and the number and the home ranges of those deer, you have to have a reasonably high percentage of your acreage in summer food plots as well as winter food plots, year-round food plots. I don't see that generally on public land. That's the reason the greatest impact that you typically see is on private land, where the landowner can prescribe the type of management that he wants and not restricted by certain land use limitations. Public land is a bit of a challenge unless the managing agency, and in some cases the landowners, and a lot of times they aren't the same. A lot of wildlife management areas are actually owned by commercial timber companies. or institutions and are leased to the state. And a lot of times they just don't have the option to put enough acreage in food plots to significantly impact that nutritional plane. For the most part, intensive food plot management is going to prove to be limited to largely private properties.
I would agree. I just, you know, we're in Michigan, we have, you know, probably the most, we have over 700,000 hunters that go into the woods every year, and many people hunt state land. And now that there's not baiting, you know, I'm thinking to myself, how can I, you know, how can I help these guys that don't have property? And that would be more of like a QDMA and getting the state game agencies to get together and say, hey, you know, if we're going to put this ban on baiting, then maybe together we can create some type of benefit to the hunters that are paying all the dollars in the state. Because I'll tell you, there's going to be a very there's right now there's a big outrage, and there's many people thinking about not hunting anymore,
well,
you know, hunting deer, which is unfortunate. You know,
it is. You know, you're touching on two or three topics. One is state agencies and large wildlife management areas, refuges, for the most part, have to be managed by regulation, by limiting the number of hunters, limiting what they can take, or limiting the weapons that they can use. It's a regulation-based management scheme. Now, but you're hitting on something on this baiting, and that is a hot topic for a lot of people, and we cover this on the Bucks of Tecumseh. We can bait in Texas, but where I'm from, in Georgia, you can't bait. And so, you know, I've seen the pros and the cons. If you have an intensive food plot program, or an intensive management program, I should say, where you've got an aggressive harvest, honestly, baiting is a management tool. Now, yes, it is a hunting tool as well, and the people that are hunting on the public land in Michigan see it as a hunting tool, as a means of getting those deer in front of them. But the state needs to look at it, and landowners need to look at it as a viable management tool to facilitate the taking of the necessary number and types of animals. And it's not whether it's good or bad. Does it fit into the management strategy for that individual piece of property or that state or that wildlife management area? And I think that's a valid question. There's a lot of people don't understand the role of baiting, but in a lot of places you can't take enough deer if the hunters can't concentrate those deer so that they can be harvested. So there's a lot of topics there, and we cover those on our on the Bucks of Tecumseh on the hot seat. And believe me, we do get in the hot seat, and we get some interesting emails in response to some of the things that we talk about.
Well, that's what makes it good, you know, is bringing out the issues, bringing out the controversies. The, you know, I try not to, when I write my blogs on my website, I just wrote it on the baiting situation, and I hit a lot of the points that you just did. So I appreciate your feedback. It was right on to what I was thinking. And it's just, I think you have to climb on your soapbox once in a while and give your opinion so that the state agencies see that, you know, people do care about what they're doing, and they just can't make, you know, jump to conclusions. So
that's right. And, you know, the other thing is state agencies need to make decisions not based on so much how much clamor there is out in the marketplace, so to speak, but they need to make unemotional decisions as to what is best for the wildlife. And I will make a case on a lot of that public hunting land up in Michigan where you have homogeneous habitat, you have vast acreage of unbroken, relatively homogeneous habitat. It is extremely difficult for the average hunter to pattern deer and effectively harvest deer in that environment. And they could face population problems by the elimination of baiting in those areas.
No question. No question. I really appreciate your feedback, and I look forward to telling everybody about this podcast, because I'll tell you, there's a valuable piece of information there.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any additional questions for David Morris?
There are no further questions, sir.
Okay, great. Well, David, before I let you go, could you talk for a minute about what your relationship has been like with Versus and what Versus is doing for outdoors television?
Yes. You know, when this is our second year on Versus, when we first started looking at Versus, they were just really making a commitment to the outdoor field. And since then, that commitment has just grown tremendously. And I think Versus is leading the way in quality outdoor programming. And I do emphasize quality because we have to compete in hunting programming with all the other myriad of programs that are out there on every possible topic now. So outdoor programming has to compete not only in content but in quality. And I see Versus and Orion Multimedia, who produces our show, does an incredible job with outdoor programming. I think they're the best in the industry. And Versus is leading the way in trend-setting high-quality outdoor programming. And, again, part of the reason is they've seen the market. I mean, it's business for Versus. It should be. But they've seen this as a very lucrative market. But also they have a passion for it. More and more I see the people that are involved at Versus understand it. They get hunting, and they realize what an important endeavor this is economically in this country. I mean, white-tailed deer is worth billions of dollars to the economy in this country, and Versus gets that, and they're going after that market very aggressively.
All right, great. I think we all agree with you. That will conclude our call. So thank you very much, David, for your time. It truly was a pleasure speaking with you. Additionally, I would like to thank Tread Barda, Sinuit Media, Horizon Interactive, and Versus Country. In addition to that, I want to thank Paul Bombara from HuntingLife.com, Chris Burgett and Everett Cord from Bulls and Beavers, Jim Lombardi from Hunters Pro Staff, G.J. Moore from Hunt Kentucky, and Jody Narantik from The Hunter's Wife. Thank you.